Welcome to the Lean and Modern Government Executive Panel Series, sponsored by Microsoft. This month, we are discussing navigating tough choices in government cloud computing. Here's your moderator, Tom Temin.
Welcome and thanks for joining us. Our guests today are Pamela Dyson. She's the Chief Technology Officer and Deputy CIO at the Securities and Exchange Commission. Zachary Goldstein, the Deputy CIO of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Lonnie Anderson, Director of Technology and the CIO at the National Security Agency, CSS. And Susie Adams, Chief Technology Officer at Microsoft Federal. And we have a topic that has been discussed a lot, but because there's such rich material, so much change going on in the cloud area, I think we'll have a lot to talk about today. And I wanted to get right into it with a question for the government panelists first, and that is the idea of making the technical case for cloud computing and also making the business case for cloud computing. I just wanted to get a sense of what comes first in your thinking and planning. Do you do one before the other? Do you do them simultaneously? How does that work? Zach, why don't we start with you?
Thanks. At NOAA, we probably think of the economic case first, because the prime driver for going to the cloud is to be able to get the most technology you can for the money, and while maintaining security, which is always a big consideration. So first we think about, usually it's triggered, by the way, when we're either putting in place a new service, and so we say, well, what are the opportunities? Is there a cloud opportunity out there? If it's an existing function, we look at, are we about to do a technical refresh? In that sense, it's driven by the technology requirement. It's always a functional requirement first. But I think that within the technical life cycle that says when you have to make this decision, you're doing the business case.
Okay, so the business case comes first, and then you decide what's the best technical approach to what it is you want to accomplish for that business.
Right, well, the technology considerations, and in particular the security considerations, are part of the business case. Right, there are certain things that we simply won't compromise on, and that says where in the cloud we're going. But when you have the option of a private cloud or a public cloud or community cloud, then the private cloud is effectively the option that you go with when you have a high security requirement. And the only time you're not going cloud at all is when, at least in NOAA, is when we have high-performance computing. We are high-performance computing, our supercomputers for research and development, for giving you the weather forecast. Those aren't cloud-based. They won't become cloud-based from a technological perspective. So the choice of going to the cloud technologically is almost a given. Mm-hmm. The real question is, what's the business model you're going to take in going to the cloud? Am I going to own the infrastructure and create a private cloud? Am I going to partner with a federal agency or a private sector firm that has adopted unique federal requirements, effectively making a community cloud based on the definition from a security perspective? Or am I going to a pure public cloud where there's no expectation of anything unique for the federal government? So because those are really the choices, and I'm going to the cloud irrespective of that, it does become a business case, subject to very strong security constraints.
Okay, and Pamela, at the SEC, how does that all work?
So likewise, we look at the business case first. Being a regulatory agency, there's not a lot of opportunities to move things to the cloud due to the sensitivity of the
data.
Just
a quick question. Is EDGAR, by the SEC?
That's hosted by the SEC. Okay. Now, EDGAR Full Text Search is in the cloud. So we leverage the cloud for that. We leverage the public cloud. It's all public information, public filings with all the attachments. But certainly quantitative analysis, high processing computing are things that we are not ready and cannot move to the cloud. The sensitivity of some of the investigative work that we do would not make us that data available to place in the cloud. But we actively and proactively seek opportunities to move things to the cloud when it makes sense. And when the technology dictates that, yes, this is the way you should go. An example of that is we're looking at moving service to the cloud. Our incident managed service, problem management services, asset management services, our service catalogs, those types of data. We are actively looking at service cloud providers to help us and to support us in that area. We think that's the best leverage of our resources and skill sets. And we would focus on our private clouds for the more proprietary information. So we actually virtualized both of our data centers, our primary and backup data centers. So we have two private clouds that we leverage. And of course, there's the ad hoc solutions in there for example, data analytics. Perhaps we can put the raw data, the metadata in the cloud and do the compilation and the analytics in our private environment. The issues that, of course, you know with that is, of course, wherever your computing is, your storage needs to be close to that. So we would have to work those types of things out. But we're proactively looking at the SEC at opportunities to leverage the cloud where it makes sense. We have so much data, not enough resources and storage to manage the data. We like the, you know, the elasticity of the cloud, the agility of the cloud, where we can certainly, you know, for peak investigations, where we have millions and millions of documents that we can leverage that kind of elasticity. But again, for us, it's really the sensitivity of regulatory information that makes that decision.
Okay, and Lonnie, at the National Security Agency, of course, you have lots of data, lots of metadata, and lots of ongoing activities, some we know about, some we don't. What is the balance, and how do you decide what's
so,
where?
So I want to echo what Zach and Pamela said. I think you make your business case first. Why do you have to go to the cloud? Or do you have to go to the cloud? In some cases, the cloud might not be the right solution. For us, we had a burn internally. NSA, we had a burning platform, right? There was no more room at the end, if you will. Our legacy relational databases were full. We were adding capabilities to them all the time, trying to basically bolting on additional capacity. We realized that only take us so far. So we actually started an effort back in 2007 to say we need to relook, 2007, 2008, we need to relook how we store data. How do we think about storing data? At that same time, Google released open source MapReduce Hadoop and said, this is kind of where we're going. We thought that was a fascinating concept. We took what they released. We put that in research for a while. Meanwhile, we continued down this large acquisition program saying, we've got a problem. We just can't keep bolting on. How do we want to look, storing data in the future? But it's more about making it accessible to our analysts so that they can use it. And in some cases, they need to be able to do that in near real time. About 2010, we came to the conclusion another relational database, regardless of how big it is, just isn't going to work. So at that point, we went all in on moving to the cloud. And when I say moving to the cloud, literally, we're moving to Google's cloud. So we adopted that same architecture. We put a security wrapper over the top of that. So there's our special sauce. The thing we add is a security wrapper over the top of that. Today, we are still flowing all data into both those legacy repositories and into the cloud. Within the next 12 months, we'll start to shut off those legacy repositories, and you'll see our analysts move to the cloud. Now you make the business case first. Why do you have to do that? What had happened over time is the relational databases had grown so large and become so numerous that when we looked at our analysts' workflow, what we found is they were spending way too much of their time just preparing to do analysis, having to go in and out of every one of those relational databases and prepare them. In the cloud, you don't need to do that. So when you look at an analyst workforce workflow and you break that down, what we try to do is say, where could we save analyst time? And there's ways to do that in the cloud that you can't do in a series of relational databases. Then there's the economy, right? The economics of the effort. It's just cheaper at the end of the day. So it is cheaper, and that's internal to NSA. You could add to that then what we're doing across the intelligence community called iSight, which is to create a common architecture that we can all leverage. And there's just no way to do that by staying in a series of isolated, federated repositories, if you will.
Okay, I want to return to that whole data question, too, but Susie Adams of Microsoft Federal, now that agencies, clearly we can hear they're into the cloud era, it's no longer something people are exploring, but exploring how to do it better and how to do it more extensively. What are the questions you're getting with respect to business cases and technology questions?
Well, I think I'll echo. I mean, this is exactly what they're saying here on the panel is exactly what we're hearing. I mean, the business case absolutely comes first. I mean, we're not in the place or in the world where we have the luxury of just ripping and replacing without a good business case to support it. And the economics are there for the cloud. And so I think what we're seeing is people are looking at the workloads that they have a business case or a justification, maybe their end of life, maybe they need to be expanded, maybe the databases are full, whatever that business case may be. And then they're turning to the cloud to see if the economics and the security and privacy that the different clouds offer make sense to them. And what we're finding is really dependent on the mission, which pretty much makes sense in the sensitivity of the data. People are choosing from, you know, private clouds, government, community, public clouds. And then what we're seeing is kind of this move towards community clouds, and not communities that are just government community, but communities, the DoD community, the Intel community, right, communities of interest, which we find quite interesting. And so from Microsoft's perspective, we actually want to be able to support all those modes and let the customer choose how they want to do this. Because at the end of the day, when you move to the cloud, you know, we have this term, the cloud. Everybody thinks it's this mystical thing that sits out there and it's in somebody else's data center. And really what we're doing is putting a layer of abstraction above the existing infrastructure that used to sit in our data centers. Very similar to what we did, if you go back and think of, you know, DOS. I can date myself and say I was a DOS developer and actually, you know, hated the mouse when it came out in Windows. And that's exactly what Windows did. And the right. The operating systems that came out from Apple and others on, that sat on top of these, you know, legacy client-based systems is we took the complexity out of it. We added a layer of abstraction, right, to be able to have people focus on the mission and on the applications. And so now we're just extending that, right, to the back-end systems that we run in our data centers and taking up the stack, taking up the OSI model and saying, you know what, you're not going to be able to flip these bits anymore. You're going to now focus on the mission, and this is going to become, you know, part of the service. And I think we can offer, and a variety of vendors can offer that, regardless of where you want your data to live, because at the end of the day, what we're hearing is data location, data access, right, are the two most important parts of this. And I think that was a big misnomer when we first started talking about cloud 4 years ago.
Okay, and by the way, I was an early adopter of Windows 286. And I was so thrilled to see my screen split in half. I thought, wow, I could get used to this. So yeah, I know whereof you come. So I want to talk about data a little bit more, because we talked a lot about relational databases and them getting filled out. And of course, relational databases are columns and rows. There is a lot of data that agencies have and want to use that doesn't fit into relational databases, unstructured data. And so I sense there's a connection between unstructured data use, getting value out of it, and the cloud. And maybe you could explain how that works a little bit. Zachary?
So when I think about the business case, the last topic we just discussed, there's an interesting connection to big data type of applications. So one of the main economic arguments for going to the cloud, when we went to, we were one of the earliest, in fact, we were at the time the largest federal adopter of cloud email and collaboration. We went to Google back in 2011. We've got a number of other software as a service applications. When you do that, you get your people out of the business of touching the iron, touching the software. What does that leave them to do? Well, manage the information, right? So we're a big owner of lots of unstructured data. There's an entire industry, the weather industry around the world is built on our data and our colleagues' data. AccuWeather doesn't have satellites. They don't have radars. I don't think they have supercomputers. So the data comes out, and how do you expose it, right? So if you can put it in the cloud and make it available, then you can focus on the metadata management. You can focus on the meaning of the data. You can focus on what you're offering, and you can even focus on things like what's the business model that people use to get access to this unstructured data, because you're not devoting all of your knowledge and expertise to maintaining the columns and the rows and the software access and all the different layers. So it's an interesting connection, but I do think that by being freed up for our most valuable resource, which is our time, from having to worry about the technology and now being able to focus on the use, the cloud becomes a big enabler to the kinds of data access and innovative uses of data that you're alluding to.
So the metadata almost abstracts the type of data that might be behind it, which is could be structured and unstructured, mixed up.
Right, and that's not the kind of thing that's easy to automate. Right, metadata is who developed it, what was its purpose, where was the satellite when that image was taken, all those things. How old was the instrument that was the sensor? You focus on data. You can focus on data quality. You can focus on who's the user. You can focus on if we can find more creative ways of and more cost-effective ways of exposing the voluminous amount of data that we, one satellite,
sure,
just imagine, right? If we can find ways to do that, then we can stimulate the economy. And cloud is one important element in freeing us up to focus on the use of our data as opposed to the mechanics.
And Pamela, before we go to break, give us a brief rundown on the unstructured piece of data and how the cloud enables that to be used better at the SEC.
Right. So that, again, is a process for us simply by the nature of the data that we collect. Certainly at the SEC, we have numerous data collection systems. We've built an enterprise data warehouse where we house all of our unstructured data. And we use Palantir and SAS and a number of analytical tools in the different environments to do analytics over that data. Our next step would be what portion of that data could we move to the cloud and leverage the robustness of the cloud, the economy of scale of the cloud, to run those same types of analytics. Again, it is the nature of the data that we collect that has prevented. So when we made the business decision to deploy an enterprise data warehouse privately as opposed to the cloud, it's because we haven't worked through all of the issues around the sensitivity of the data. But that is the next step, the next progression that we're trying to make in terms of now what portions of that data can we move to the cloud to gather just the types of efficiencies that we're talking about.
All right, we're going to take a short break on that note. Our guests today are Pamela Dyson, Chief Technology Officer and Deputy CIO at the Securities and Exchange Commission, Zachary Goldstein, Deputy CIO of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, Susie Adams, Chief Technology Officer at Microsoft Federal, and Lonnie Anderson, Director of Technology and the CIO at the National Security Agency, CSS. I'm your moderator, Tom Temin, and this is Navigating Tough Choices in Government Cloud Computing, a panel discussion sponsored by Microsoft here on federalnewsradio.com at 1500 AM.
Security, compliance, flexibility. There's a lot to consider when moving to the cloud. You need a partner who can run your legacy assets as well as your new cloud assets on an enterprise level and at enterprise standards. You need Microsoft. Only Microsoft has the hard-earned experience and expertise, including FedRAMP JAB certification across the enterprise cloud landscape that you can bet your business on. Learn how Microsoft's experience in data centers and cloud gives you the best of both worlds. Visit Microsoft.com/government.
Welcome back to our panel discussion, Navigating Tough Choices in Government Cloud Computing, sponsored by Microsoft here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Our guests today are Pamela Dyson, Chief Technology Officer and Deputy CIO at the Securities and Exchange Commission, Susie Adams, Chief Technology Officer at Microsoft Federal, Lonnie Anderson, Director of Technology and CIO at the National Security Agency, and Zach Goldstein, Deputy CIO at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. I'm your moderator, Tom Temin. And we talked about data in the first segment, and we could go on about that, but I want to get into the infrastructure issues because that's really so close to the whole cloud decision-making process. And we know now there are lots of flavors of cloud, fundamentally public and private, private meaning the government owns it, but then within each of those, there's a million flavors that could be contractor owned but government operated. It could be multi-tenant. It could be dedicated to the agency. Same thing with public multi-tenant. You can have a public cloud that's yours alone if you want to pay for that type of thing. So what I'd like to do is, starting with Lonnie, get an idea of what the strategy is and what is the criteria that drive what type of cloud you use. I'm presuming it's the type of workload and also the sensitivity of the data and some combination there, but you tell us.
And then what you want to do with that data.
Right.
And how quickly you need to get access to the data. So of course, all of our clouds are private clouds. I'll say that right up front. All government clouds. Internal to NSA, we actually are in the process. Right now, today, we have two clouds. We have an NSA cloud that has three different types for use by NSA only, NSA CSS only. And that's a utility cloud, a data cloud, and a storage cloud.
And by the way, CSS, just tell us briefly.
Cryptologic Security Services.
Okay.
That's the military.
Right.
So,
right,
so the National Security Agency, the U.S. military, has a portion of its members who perform SIGINT or cryptologic support, and they're members of the CSS. So we consider that just one enterprise, if you will. So internal to NSA, we've got our own three flavors of cloud: a utility, a data, and a storage cloud. Utility cloud for virtualization, for developer work, for if you need elasticity. We actually took that as an open source effort out of NASA. NASA had started a utility cloud a while back. They actually based it on Amazon's EC2. They open sourced that. We adopted it. So that's our utility cloud. We took that and we run with it. We've been using it for about 2 years now. We've got lots of developers who use that. We've got a data cloud in-house. That's where our large scale, that's where we expect most of our analysts to live. And then we've got storage clouds in our data warehouses. External to NSA, which I guess you'd call still private, but a joint cloud where we use across the IC, we're responsible for the government cloud for the intelligence community. A program that the ODNI is sponsoring called iSight, Intelligence Community IT Efficiencies, or IT Effectiveness, charged us and CIA with developing the cloud infrastructure. We're responsible for the GovCloud. The CIA is responsible for what we call the commercial cloud. CIA's commercial cloud is an Amazon. They chose Amazon EC2. If you think infrastructure as a service, that's kind of what that's there to provide. The GovCloud will be an exact replica of our cloud. Our goal is to merge those clouds, converge them, and have a cloud, not two clouds that we're trying to separately maintain. I think it goes back to what I talked about early on. It's based on our mission requirements, how our analysts need to use those clouds, how our developers need to use those clouds, and how our data collectors use them. That depends which cloud they go to and the time dependency, how quickly they need access to data.
And Susie, do the cloud providers, are they generally prepared to offer all of these different flavors and setups depending on each customer's fine grain requirements? It's not just bulk storage here.
No. And I do think it depends on, what the workload is. But I think across the board, if you're talking infrastructure as a service, platform and software, that, a lot of vendors have many options for both public, private, hybrid, community. I think the way, what's interesting about this is that there's lots of different ways you can look at it. So when we look at physical versus logical isolation, you really have to look at that all the way up the OSI model. You have to look at it, does the data need to be, does the physical infrastructure need to be dedicated to that particular workload and not shared? And when we say physical, does that mean the network layer, the physical assets themselves, do they need to be caged? Do they need to be, what type of perimeter do they need around them to be secure? And then you start to kind of, based on that, you can really walk up that stack. And I'll tell you what we're finding is as people start to do the economic analysis of building something that's truly private, they start to realize quickly that the economies of scale that they had hoped to achieve diminish. The more private and the more isolated you get. And so what we're seeing is people look at it truly at each layer and try to determine, is that level of isolation sufficient? Say, for example, can I share the physical hardware with maybe perhaps somebody else in my community to do a like task or host a like workload, but yet have physical isolation higher up the stack, perhaps at the data storage layer and at the network layer? And so we're starting to see some very interesting architectural designs happen for these private clouds. So you can almost call them quasi-private or community clouds that have physical and logical isolation at different layers depending on the sensitivity of the data. And I think the good news is that, from the operating systems we support, that that's the way we're looking at it. And we want to give people choice to be able to do that. So you should be able to go out, spin up a Windows server, right, be able to stand up a private cloud, host it on any of the OEMs, really vendors on racks of servers, build your own private cloud, and then you get to decide how you're going to do that physical versus logical isolation across the stack. And the software, right, should support that, including, right, the portal infrastructure that sits on top of it. Mm-hmm. For example, we're actually extending our Azure portal and that whole self-service chargeback interface and allowing people to install it behind their firewall on top of Windows Server 2012 R2. And I'm sure, other vendors are starting to do the same types of things so that you're actually enabling people to take some of the engineering enhancements that have been born kind of in the cloud for things like software-based storage and networking and moving that technology into packaged software that could then be hosted behind the firewall so that you don't necessarily have to call up a big vendor and spend, hundreds of millions of dollars to try to get a commercial cloud behind your data center. You could do it at a scale that's a rack of servers or a few use of servers. And so I think that is, as I mentioned before, data location and access matter. And I think, the vendor community has finally, the light bulbs have gone on and we've all realized that, wow, if we're going to do this, we need to provide technology that works in the ways that our customers need to use it.
Okay. And Zach, at the at NOAA, when you're looking at those kinds of services, how do you specify that? You must get together with the engineers and then you've got to translate that into requirements. I mean, how do you get exactly what you want to that fine degree of cloud services? This thing shared, that thing virtually isolated.
Try not to get with the engineers first.
Right.
So usually you give the engineers last.
You tell them after you're done.
Right. Well, because it starts, as we talked about in the first segment, it starts with the business case, which means it starts with the functional requirement. And the engineers are going to be responsive to that. What we just heard from the other panelists is that you can have any technology you want at any level of joint tenancy and any level of sharing. So the first things you ask about, to get back to your original question about joint tenant, public, private, community, how do you do that, is you look at the use cases for the information. As Lonnie explained, how are you going to use the data? So we've actually laid this out. It's actually part of our data center consolidation effort, because that plus the cloud initiative are all about place. Where does the data go? Where does the infrastructure go? But the trade that you have is between saving money and getting out of the business of turning screwdrivers and writing code, and control. Because the further away you get from actually being able to touch it and say, that's my server, the good news is now I don't have to pay for that server, even if I don't own it, but it's dedicated to me, so I'm paying for the entire cost. The bad news is that the bad news is I've got that burden, mm-hmm. and the good news is I've got all this control. So to the extent I'm willing to give up control, then I'm willing to, then I can reap the economic benefits, and it's a spectrum. So in the case of a private cloud, we don't have classified information the way NSA does, not in our computers anyway. But we do have information that if it gets corrupted, it's not about confidentiality, it's about availability and integrity. Either of those get violated, people's lives can be lost. Mm-hmm. Imagine we don't give you the hurricane track. Imagine the tornado warning is delayed. So for those sorts of applications, we need that control. And the control isn't just because we want to make sure nobody gets into the data. It's availability, but in a much broader sense, as well as the security sense. And that is, if things go south and I'm a shared tenant in a community cloud or a public cloud, and I'm not the only entity that's being attacked, there is an interruption in the internet, there is some other kind of issue, can we afford to have someone else's priorities determine the availability of a tornado warning? Right. So that's where the control becomes so important. And when the control is that important, we suck up the cost, we use all the technology you've heard described, build it privately, and then we talk to the engineers. And then you can imagine that when it's email, right, then, well, lives aren't at stake. We were driven to go to the cloud because we had enough of our own problems building and maintaining the system, and we said, what are the options here? And we actually, as part of the procurement process, we went to consider the alternatives of going to effectively a community cloud, and we went. When you lose that kind of control, you get reimbursed by the reduced cost and the economies of scale. But you also get into a troubling world where now you're starting to lose visibility over security. And so one of the challenges that we have when we make these choices is, how do you understand the risks when you give up the control for economic benefit, mm-hmm. in an overall structure that says it made sense to go public, but how do you still understand what your risks are? Because the basic rule of the business we're in is you can't accept a risk you don't understand. So visibility becomes a challenge in maintaining it, even as you give up control over what sure. they do and how they do it.
All right, Pam, walk us through the SEC's thought processes there with respect to the infrastructure and how it is set up for you.
We have a similar process. We certainly work with the business first. We take a look at how the data is going to be used, the types of data that we're going to share. We always look at the economies of scale. Does it make sense for us to build this internally and host it, or to do it externally? And, of course, we have our security people at the table with us, and often our general counsel people at the table with us. We make those determinations.
And you keep the engineers away also.
And we keep the engineers away also, right? So, I mean, the key is the business case and the business requirements. Sometimes there's business process reengineering that's involved and so forth. And so we go through that effort, And then we sit down with the technical staff and say, and our enterprise architects to say, what can we leverage in-house? Does it make sense to do this as a part of our infrastructure? Do we go out and procure infrastructure as a service, or do we go public with it? There's no sensitivity here, and we can gain those economy of scales. We can pull back some resources that we can redirect, but we certainly bring the engineers in last.
All right. I also wanted to ask about the Federal Data Center Consolidation Initiative, which is still in effect, last I heard. Yet the cloud mandate and the cloud discussion kind of arrived in the federal government at the same time the Consolidation Initiative. Somehow we felt they were related, but they were really separate initiatives. So I'm wondering, in the context of so much cloud activity that we've discussed and all the thinking that's going into that, whatever happened to consolidation, and is that still something agencies are actively, well, I know you have to say yes because, you know, OMB could tune in, but, you know, in reality, how is that all looking in the cloud context?
Well, it is. For us and for the IC, speaking for Al and his team, data center consolidation is a huge focus effort and has been for a few years now. We've actually shut down over a third of our data centers in the last 24 months and will continue down that path. That said, and we talked about geography earlier, Susie mentioned it, kind of, I think, hit it head on. I used to get questions when people would come in, they'd say, I'd like to see it. And I'd say, see what? The cloud. Where is it? As though it were a single, can you take me to it and show me the cloud? So we are geographically dispersed.
Right after you show them the internet.
Right after. we're geographically dispersed in different power grids, so we've got redundancy built in because you can't afford to have our FI mission go down. That's just not something the government can afford to happen. So it's not a single location. It's not a single instance. It's geographically dispersed. It's where we need it. Right, wherever you can't afford latency, well, then you've got to put some way to mm-hmm. keep that data there so you can get access to it. So we're all over. We're all about reducing the number of data centers. What had happened over time is people had built little niche data centers to support whatever their requirement was. It was for legitimate reasons. There's not a doubt in my mind. But as especially across the IC, we try to get to a point where we make all data shareable to people who are authorized to see it. Clearly, a big focus on security.
Sure.
So as we do that across the IC, we need less data centers than we have in the past.
And people just have to retire that PDP 11, whether they want to or not.
Whether or not they want
in that
to.
Closet.
That's right.
And Pam, what about SEC? How's your consolidation effort going in context of cloud?
Right. So consolidation was a big deal for us. Over the last 2 years, we virtualized and consolidated both of our data centers. We've moved both of our data centers. They are geographically dispersed from one another. So where we're headed now is we're looking at other environments like our development environments and our lab environments. Those are local and internal to the SEC, but those are good candidates for cloud-based solutions, we believe. So whether or not we move those to our public clouds that we built in our data center or to move those out to a third-party private-type cloud under a FedRAMP system is where we're looking. But, yeah, data center consolidation was a huge effort for us. 2 data center moves in 2 years.
All right.
And we are 99% virtualized.
Okay, well, that brings us to taking a short break. Our guests today are Susie Adams, Chief Technology Officer at Microsoft Federal, Lonnie Anderson, Director of Technology and the CIO at the National Security Agency, CSS, Zach Goldstein, the Deputy CIO of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and Pam Dyson, Chief Technology Officer and Deputy CIO at the Securities and Exchange Commission. I'm your moderator, Tom Temin, and this is Navigating Tough Choices in Government Cloud Computing panel discussion, sponsored by Microsoft, here on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Security, compliance, flexibility. There's a lot to consider when moving to the cloud. You need a partner who can run your legacy assets as well as your new cloud assets on an enterprise level and at enterprise standards. You need Microsoft. Only Microsoft has the hard-earned experience and expertise, including FedRAMP JAB certification across the enterprise cloud landscape that you can bet your business on. Learn how Microsoft's experience in data centers and cloud gives you the best of both worlds. Visit Microsoft.com/government.
Welcome back to our panel discussion, Navigating Tough Choices in Government Cloud Computing, sponsored by Microsoft. And we're here at Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Our guests today are Zach Goldstein, Deputy CIO of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, Lonnie Anderson, Director of Technology and CIO at the National Security Agency, CSS, Pam Dyson, Chief Technology Officer and Deputy CIO at the Securities and Exchange Commission, and Susie Adams, Chief Technology Officer at Microsoft Federal. I'm your moderator, Tom Temin. And we really cannot have a complete cloud discussion without talking about security and the FedRAMP process, because it is an always moving topic, and because security is never given in anything regarding federal computing. So, Zach, why don't we start with you, and what's your perception of how FedRAMP is going? Has it yielded the kinds of things that you, as someone in charge of technology at an agency, feels is there, and what else are you looking for beyond that?
I think FedRAMP is a great start. When we went to the cloud with our unified messaging service back in 2011, FedRAMP wasn't there. But the principle that we applied was the same principle that FedRAMP is doing for the entire government, and that's create once, use many. So when we went to the cloud, we didn't sponsor our own creation of an assessment and authorization package. The General Services Administration had already done that, working with Google. I guess Google made an investment on their own to do that. They had granted it an authorization to operate. FedRAMP does the same thing. But what people have to understand is that just because you get an authorization to operate doesn't mean they're authorized to operate in your agency, because an authorization to operate is a risk acceptance by an authorizing official. So I'm the authorizing official for the Unified Messaging Service. I looked at all the data that came from this accreditation package. I evaluated the test results. I looked at the plans of action and milestones, all this government speak for security, and said, yep, this is a risk I'm willing to accept. I understand what the residual risk is, and I know what I have to do to mitigate the residual risks that I accept because of the things they haven't done. So to the extent that FedRAMP can do that writ large and offer up a library of accreditation packages that have gone through this process, it can save everybody a lot of money. It saves the customers money. It saves industry money. Another good thing that FedRAMP has done is the certification of the independent providers. Because irrespective of how the deal is done, you want to know that the testing was done by someone who knew what they were doing and they were independent. But there's a lot of things that FedRAMP probably wouldn't ever be the answer to. There are requirements that are mission unique and highly security relevant that you wouldn't want to have necessarily in a standard federal baseline. So, for example, where is your data stored? If you have Privacy Act data, if you have sensitive data, to the extent that confidentiality may be an issue, or then you care. Is it stored in the United States? Some vendors don't understand that. Most vendors do. But it's not the kind of thing that you want to make mandatory. In fact, there was a GAO finding about that in a protest. It has to be based on the agency's mission requirements.
Sure. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of security things that go beyond it. Another big thing. And I alluded to this earlier when I was talking about the loss of control, but you still have a requirement to accept risk, and that's visibility over the current state of the security. FedRAMP has, because the government's security control stack includes continuous monitoring, there's a requirement that the people who have an accreditation do continuous monitoring, and that's great. So how do I know what they're finding? Right, so this is a real problem. If you're a cloud provider like Microsoft, the odds are, I'm not going to presume, I could be wrong, but odds are you don't have to do a lot of outsourcing for IT. And you probably can do it internally, and so you have your automated audit logging tools, and you can use ArcSight or some other kind of thing, maybe a Microsoft product, to figure out what your current threat space is, to know just as it's happening that there are transactions which indicate a bad actor, maybe an insider threat. Maybe someone communicating with the outside when they shouldn't be. So you need to know that real time. You can't have a person going in with a query to into some database. But how do you do that if you're not willing to give everything you do to one enterprise? If it's not all private, if it's hybrid, if it's I've got my applications in a public cloud, I've got my forecasting systems in a private cloud, how do I fuse that? There's a gap. And I've talked to some people about it. Maybe some sort of service that a third party could provide to actually perform security integration.
Okay. And Pam, what's your thought on FedRAMP, and how has the SEC found? Do you have that level of trust, or do you also want to be able to verify when things are virtualized?
Right. So for us, FedRAMP will certainly present opportunities with their certification and accreditation processes that we would look to move other systems and data to the cloud. We certainly would continue to do our own assessments, security assessments internally for the overall solution. Again, the closest walk for us is the type of registrant data that we collect and where that data will live, where it's stored, and assurances around the integrity of that data, because it's key to everything that we do at the SEC. So, again, you know, we are, you know, being pragmatic in this approach, holding probably a little more publicly and internally than most agencies are doing right now. But I think that the FedRAMP, and we're already waiting to, so FedRAMP certifications are supposed to be in June. We are already teeing up opportunities that we believe we can leverage the FedRAMP certifications and move some of that data to the cloud.
Okay, and Lonnie, at NSA, is there anything that you do for which the FedRAMP certification, the medium level security, is sufficient?
No, I think we
not
go,
even email.
I think we tend to go above and beyond that just because of the level of data we deal with and the classification of the data we deal with across the IC. So I mentioned in the first segment when we made a decision back in 2009, we're moving to the cloud. We're just going to go to the cloud. We adopted what was available via open source to the extent we could. What we decided to focus our development efforts on was the security aspect, or that what we call our special sauce. So what we've tried to build into our cloud is data provenance. So I have security down to the cell level that we literally can track from the point we ingest data into the cloud until that data leaves the cloud, who touches it, where it goes, what they do with it when they touch it. So you might have heard recently we have this saying we call tag people and mm-hmm. tag the data, trust the tag. So people, you are authorized to see certain data. If you're in the National Security Agency, you've got a certain level of security clearance. Based on that clearance, you're authorized to see certain levels of data. Once we tag the data, we match the tags of the data with the tags of the people. You see the data you're authorized to see in the cloud. Our challenge with a lot of our old repositories is they were built before we had the ability to do that. So when you talk about the ability to monitor, to track, you do need to be able to do that real time. It can't be something you do as a forensics check down the road and go, yeah, this just happened. So how do we audit? How do we build in auditing? We've considered all of that since 2009, and we think the world we're moving to from a security perspective is much more secure than kind of where we've been in the past and where we are today while we're in this dual legacy and cloud environment.
So in the cloud, you want to make sure that you maintain that quality of not being the proverbial porcupine where it's, you know, hard to get to from the outside, but easy once you're inside. Yeah. Even if you're at the NSA, you can't see everything. Everybody can't see
everything.
Well,
that's exactly right. You see what you're authorized to see, and we know what you see. And we know if you move data, if you print data, if you copy data, whatever you do with the data that's in the cloud, that's all tracked.
All right. And Susie, I mean, is FedRAMP just a leveling thing for all of the competing vendors in this space, or can you distinguish yourself even after having gotten FedRAMP certification?
Sure. I'll start by saying when we think FedRAMP's a great thing, you know, otherwise we'd be developing these 2,000-page documents in 25 million different formats for all these different agencies. And I think that the one thing that FedRAMP's done a really good job at is kind of drawing that line in the sand. It is probably at a lower level than we had hoped, because I think, you know, if you look at all the verticals, right, that's a small subset of verticals that are going to standardize on just the moderate, the FedRAMP moderate. It's a large number, right, of agencies. But we'd actually like to see FedRAMP's charter grow and see them have multiple levels of certification that vendors can go for. And so to go to FISMA High, to include, you know, to actually build on the security requirements for U.S.-only citizens, background investigations, to solve some of the big nut kind of problems that we're facing, big rock problems with how do we actually get people through background investigations and who adjudicates those and who holds those clearances, you know, when we're looking at a multi, you know, serving multi-agencies, because cloud really is about, you know, sharing that infrastructure. And if we can't draw a line in the sand for communities of interest and get enough people in those communities of interest, then it doesn't really make any sense for the vendors to provide that cloud. And then it just naturally goes to, you know, more of a private cloud. And so I think, you know, to help this community, we'd actually like to see people kind of come together a little bit in maybe it's just Department of Defense and some of the work they're doing with the DISA Cloud Broker Office. Mm-hmm. They're building on top of FedRAMP, which we think is awesome. And then they're going to have another, you know, another layer of controls that we can implement with a standard template, with a secure, with a, an addendum, right, to FedRAMP. We think that's a great start, right? And if we could take that and then build on top of that, it would kind of make it very clear on what we have to meet, how we can meet it, and what those communities would look like from a number of seat count, and is there a business, right, for that particular community to build something and host it in our cloud. And I think that is the biggest challenge. I mean, from, you know, I think all the vendors, and I, you know, I can only speak from how we look at it, but I can tell you that we are more than happy to provide private clouds hosted in our data center if the community is large enough and the interest is there. With U.S. citizens, with, you know, guards and gates and guns in your own colo, I mean, we'd be happy to do that, to take our commercial service and do that. I think the challenge is, you know, what are the security controls? And if every single agency comes with a laundry list of different things, well, then that's not really... that's not really a commercial cloud. Then we're starting to talk, you know, private clouds, sure, yeah, with much smaller communities. And so I think that's the biggest challenge as we move forward with the adoption of cloud is what are those security controls, how do we manage those?
All right, so we've talked a lot today about security. We've talked about data. We've talked about the structure of the infrastructure and the business approaches. But ultimately, all of this is about applications, because without applications, then users and our agency missions don't get done. So the point of computing is the application, you know, to run against all that data. So I'd like to spend the last couple of minutes talking about what your application trajectory is for your agency and as you move to the cloud. And let's kind of make the presumption that the easy ones have pretty much been done at this point, which is collaboration tools, maybe unified communications and email. If I'm wrong on that, let me know. But why don't we go right down the line with the federal people, starting with Zach.
You're right. A lot of us have done the easy ones. Other applications that we either have moved out onto or looking at, we have our Tier 1 help desk. We call it the National Service Desk. The people who provide it are contractors using a cloud-based ticketing system, configuration management system, and so that's a good one, because you need to be able to access it from anywhere. If you start off with just Tier 1 as the help desk, you've got these other tiers of people who are actually doing hands-on work, but they can all access it. So the basic idea that the cloud is out there, it's easy to get to, it doesn't get choked easily by that, makes distributed applications, distributed use of an application, a very good use case, mm-hmm, for going to the cloud. Mobile device management is another place where we've gone to a cloud-based solution. One of the things that I was thinking about before we came here was this idea. We tended in NOAA to move out much more smartly with software as a service. And I was thinking about why is that? Part of it was the story I told earlier about the dilemma we had with our old service. But part of it is also because the cloud is a great way for the commercial world to offer services end to end without a lot of burden on their customers. It makes it very easy to buy it. And so what you find, I think, is that more and more there will be applications that the best offering is only in the cloud.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So you may actually end up going that way because the market says, well, I can make it really easy for you to buy this, and you don't have to make any investment. You just give me a fee. You give me a subscription, and you've got something that prior to that used to require $500,000 worth of investment. So as I think about applications, it's that dynamic where, from a commercial side, is there something new and useful that can be offered that we need, and so we end up going there first before,
okay,
our internal ones even.
And Pam, sounds like you're nodding your head, so it looks like that's the way you see it.
Yeah, my response is not much different. I think I alluded to it early on. One of the things that we're looking at least in a public cloud situation, even though we're waiting for FedRAMP certification for some of these vendors as well, would be our service management area, mm-hmm, our incident management, problem management, change management, configuration management, knowledge management, those bases. As you know, the SEC is dispersed across the country, and at headquarters we're responsible for providing those services across. And so to the fact that we can leverage the cloud to store this information and to make the capability available globally through the cloud, we're really exploring that. That is our first order of impetus. And that we're working on now as software as a service while we work on the infrastructure stuff, okay. Which is a little more challenging.
All right, Lonnie, we'll give you the last 60 seconds on applications.
So I'll be quick. When we started this, when we started our move, a lot of our analysts wanted to take the applications that worked in the legacy and just move those to the cloud. And we went back and forth culturally trying to tell them why that's not such a good idea. I think we're at a point now where they understand the cloud gives them opportunities, so it's not about moving applications. We're working hand-in-hand with industry on what applications are we going to apply in the cloud. So when you think of analytics, presentation tools, framework, integration tools, we live heavily in the FOSS world, so the free open source software. We've incorporated libraries, and we're working hand-in-hand with them on other programs that we either send there for them to look at and help us make better or that they just provide to us that are available. Of the applications that we have moved to the cloud and integrated in the cloud, 50% are COTS and 50% are GOTS. So it's kind of we rely on industry. We understand there's a lot of talent out there. We're trying to leverage the talent that they have.
All right. Well, lots of material we've covered today, but that brings us to the point where we have to close here. I'd like to thank today's guest. Pam Dyson is the Chief Technology Officer and Deputy CIO at the Securities and Exchange Commission. Zach Goldstein, Deputy CIO of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Lon Anderson, the Director of Technology and the CIO at the National Security Agency, CSS. And Susie Adams, Chief Technology Officer at Microsoft Federal. I'm Tom Temin, federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Thank you for listening to the Lean and Modern Government Executive Panel Series, sponsored by Microsoft on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. This month, we discussed navigating tough choices in government cloud computing. The entire discussion can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com.
Security, compliance, flexibility. There's a lot to consider when moving to the cloud. You need a partner who can run your legacy assets as well as your new cloud assets on an enterprise level and at enterprise standards. You need Microsoft. Only Microsoft has the hard-earned experience and expertise, including FedRAMP JAB certification across the enterprise cloud landscape that you can bet your business on. Learn how Microsoft's experience in data centers and cloud gives you the best of both worlds. Visit Microsoft.com/government.